Welcome back to Radio Gorgeous Jane.
It's lovely to be here again.
So in the meantime, since we've last seen you, you've written yet another one of your delightful novels, Mum in the Middle. Can you tell us about Mum in the Middle?
Well, Mum in the Middle was quite a long time in the making, really, just because life got in the way a bit. So it came out 4 years after I'd written my last book, quite a long gap. And it actually sort of evolved and changed as I was writing it, because when I first started it, it was an empty nest book. By the time I finished it, it had become about the stretched generation, which was a term I didn't even know when I started writing that book. And now people who are reading it are saying, oh yeah, I'm that, you know, that's my life, I'm in that situation too. And the stretched generation are the ones who have adult children who either haven't left the nest or have returned to the nest, which happened to me in that period of writing time, for one reason or another. They just need to live at home in a way that we didn't. And also, all our parents are living longer and longer. So women in their 50s, as I am, who would once have been sitting there with their feet up or pottering in the garden, and now, like, looking after these great big adult children that seem to revert to 15-year-olds with alarming alacrity once they're back under your roof. Yeah, you can do my washing. Yeah, you can cook. But also our elderly parents are beginning to kick off, as it were. And when I conceived the book, I had this sort of thought that her mother might have dementia. And I thought to myself, I must really research this carefully because, you know, I must get that right. Well, very soon in the writing process, my aunt, for whom I am lasting power of attorney, went down with dementia with Lewy bodies, which is absolutely devastating. I mean, it just happened so fast. And she's in a home, absolutely incapable of anything, you know, having been a really intelligent woman who could, you know, did the Times crossword every day, spoke fluent Greek, as a published writer. Now she's just, you know, it's awful, awful. Yeah, I've realised that actually I was sort of writing the zeitgeist without knowing it. And, you know, I went out for a drink the other night with a group of women I don't know very well. And they were all saying, oh God, that's me. You know, my mother's doing this, my father's doing that. You know, oh, my kids are home again. And so it's a whole new sort of motherhood.
Well, it sounds like it took you 4 years to write it because you were living it.
Yeah. No, well, that's true, actually. You know, I mean, I'd started it, then my aunt had dementia, my mother fell over and cracked her hip, and that was all traumatic. My father began to be a bit tricky, to say the very least. Memory problems and things. So, yeah, I was ill. You know, things just happened, and, it did take a long time.
I was going to say, because I'll be 52 next month. But I had the sandwich generation because I had my child late. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking after a 3-year-old when my uncle died. And now I think I'll just be in this suspended thing because all of my parents have died. Mm-hmm. So, and I think my son will probably never leave. So I'll just be in this, suspended.
How old is your son now?
He's 14 now.
Oh, he'll never leave. No, he'll never leave. And if he does leave, he'll come back. Mine's left 3 times, my son, but he's back again.
Fingers crossed, maybe the next time will take. And you'll be on your saga holidays, yeah, as planned.
I don't mind having him at home, actually. We get on really well.
I was going to say, and it is a different time in one's life. But at the same time, I think your books have actually grown up with you. You know, in a sense that, you know, young, frothy, 20-year-olds, you know, falling in love and having mishaps. And now it's, you know, you're in your late 40s and having mishaps. But love still looms.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's true that, you know, if I look back at my novels, you know, it started off with sort of somebody single and childless. And then I had people with slightly bigger children. And then they had teenagers. And now I've done the adult children. But yes, I always do some sort of love story, and hopefully this is the love story in this book, is a sort of realistic, mature love story. And without any spoilers, you know, it's not all, when you're that age and you've got older kids and you're looking after your mother with dementia, it's not all hearts and flowers. It's about somebody that you can feel good with and comfortable with, and they can accept you for what you are. You know, it's not the same as when you were 30.
It isn't. And also, if people don't have baggage by now, you wonder why not.
Yes.
You know, when people are looking to be set up and I say, yeah, well, he hasn't been married. He's never been married. There's a reason for that, you know. But by this time, obviously, people have baggage.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's probably a terrible thing to say, really. But I do think there is a difference often between men who have had children and been married and men who haven't. And sometimes you can sit and talk to somebody and I can just think, I bet you haven't got kids. And, you know, you sort of drop it into conversation lately. Have you got children? And you just, you know.
I think that's anybody. I think that's male or female. There is, it's not like some special club you join, but there is an immediate perspective that you have.
Yes, and you are forced to grow up, aren't you?
And you're forced to have, you know, to not look at life through purely your own eyes.
Yeah, no, that's right. I
mean, immediately.
You know, however selfish you are, and I'm probably pretty selfish, you cannot be. You know, you have to look after this other person. And it does change you. You know, there are certain things in life that change you irrevocably.
Mm.
And being a parent's one of them, isn't it?
Yes, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
There are, yes, it is. I would say, you know, if people still want to use the word chick lit or women's fiction, it's definitely in that category and it's readable and it's fun. However, it is more packed than that. One, it runs over 400 pages, and there is, and while it is pacey, because Tess has three grown children, there's room for all of them to be experiencing mm-hmm. different things, as well as there's, you take on sort of some political aspects as well. It takes place in a town in Kent. You do live in Broadstairs. And it does address some of the difficulties that both why the young people are back, because it's impossible to live in London, the London-centric nature. So why did you want to bring in more things, make it more meaty?
Well, because, as you say, I live in Broadstairs, which is 3 miles or so from Margate. And Margate has had a great influx of Londoners. And a lot of media people, writers, artists, because they've been able to swap a tiny studio in Islington for a 4-bedroom house with a garden, you know. And
With a beautiful beach.
We've got a high-speed rail link now. And, you know, there's been a big influx. And some of the locals are resentful. I personally think that they have been what we call the DFLs down from London. I think they've been a great power for good. And a lot of the things that have happened in the area have been driven by newcomers who've got all that enthusiasm. However, you can see how the locals feel if their kids can no longer afford to buy anywhere because the house prices go up. And there was a bit of bad feeling locally, which sort of inspired me. There was a particular person got a bit targeted who was a incomer. And that just inspired me. And so I made Tess a DFL, both for the reason that I wanted her to have a new beginning where she's, you know, the book opens where she's got a new house, new town, all the kids have left. And she's actually feeling a bit, oh, gosh, you know, London's gone, I'm here on my own, da da da. And of course, as the book goes on, back they come. But I'm quite interested in that whole dynamic because I've seen it around me. And yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, with Margate, it's a very interesting town now since Turner Contemporary and Tracy Emin connection. You know, she's come back and she's developing this studio, and Turner Contemporary's been very successful. But sometimes you feel that you're in two towns because you can sit in the old part where it's cupcakes and, you know, cheese shops and, you know, beautiful people walking around. And, you know, you can look at the shoes and the handbags and think, you're probably not local. And then literally you walk 100 metres up the road and you're in quite deprived
area. Quite rowdy. I've been there twice and I found exactly that. You know, along the seafront, you have your, you know, your antique shops and your vegan cupcakes, as you say. And even the Playland has gotten poshed up and reopened and really nice. And then just one street back from that is Margate.
Another world.
Yes, yeah. Was it Margate that, you know, that Tracy Emin grew up in?
Yes, exactly. And I'm really sort of interested in that. And I like it. I find it quite vibrant that there's a sort of, you know, without sounding too naff, but there's a gritty sort of bit to it. And I also obviously enjoy the beautiful little places and outlets that have come up. But I do find it quite interesting the way that works. And the other point is that even if you haven't had that influx of Londoners, the world has changed. Property has changed. I grew up in Thanet. I wasn't born there, but my parents came down when I was a child, so I went to school there. I didn't go to university for one reason or another. I had took a gap year and then I never went. You know, I had a dodgy boyfriend and a dodgy flat and a job. So I didn't ever go. But I was able to buy my first house when I was 21 years old. And I had a job which was paying me about £5,000 a year. And my employer was able to say that with bonuses and bits and bobs, I would earn about six, so that I could borrow three times my income. And I bought my first house for £16,000. And it was in estate, and we had to do it up. I had the dodgy boyfriend came to. But that house now is worth at least £180,000. It's probably worth £200,000. And even if it was in the same state that I bought it in, which needed refurbishing, you'd still expect to pay £140,000, £150,000 for it. Which means my son would have had to do the same as me, would have had to earn £50,000 in Thanet, age 21. Well, I mean,
not going to happen.
It's never going to happen. Not in 100 years.
That's always been. I mean, okay, so the Turner contemporary is there because Turner used to come there.
Yes.
On the ferry, come off, you know, the scourge of gentrification came, you know, perhaps with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This change, we don't like change.
No.
And especially in smaller places, we don't like change. But then, you know, I'm from New York. My New York doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I mean, I was just in Brooklyn the other day by the Gowanus Canal, which was famous for chemical waste and mafia dumped bodies. That's when you went to swim with the fishes, mm-hmm. That was where you swam, you know, with your concrete shoes on. It is now million-dollar lofts. That is the world over. But then you expect that in cities, then I guess people don't expect it sort of where it's been quieter.
No, but I mean, I think you have to be realistic. You know, when it's impossible to live in London now, if you're young, it's possible to buy anywhere. So it's going to go out. I mean, it's happened in London, hasn't it? All the bits that when I was a child and used to come up here were all sort of almost no-go areas are now completely gentrified and beautiful and full of gorgeous little, you know, shops and restaurants. And it's going to happen. People are going to move out. And where I live, it happened to Whitstable. And then it's going to go on down the coast. I mean, from my point of view, I'm thrilled that there's a high-speed rail link. I can get up here in an hour and 20 minutes. Perfect.
So again, you've been riding the zeitgeist in that way as well.
Yeah. So yeah. I just sort of wanted Tess to have those sort of issues. You know, that she moves into this town, and some people are not going to think that's a marvellous thing. You know, yeah. Some people are going to be very friendly to her, but some people are going to think, oh, another yeah. one.
You're not from around here.
Yeah, that's right.
That attitude.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
I remember, you know, I started my writing career, in inverted commas, when I used to write for the women's magazines. And I remember there was a lovely editor who used to sort of give you very good feedback about what she wanted in magazines. And she said, what I basically want in a short story is to have a smile on my face or a lump in my throat, or preferably both. Mm-hmm. And I like those sort of books where you're sort of smiling and chuckling and then all of a sudden... I mean, have you ever read Terms of Endearment? Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. I read that on holiday and I was laughing out loud on the beach and then I was sobbing. So I like it if people say, oh, it made me laugh, but it made me cry. Because I think that is what... It, you know, you've got to have texture in a book, haven't you? You've got to have humour and pathos, you know, the high-speed car chase and the reflective bits. If it's all light on the water, it's too quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we really do. I mean, of course, we get it with movies. And, of course, Terms of Endearment is one of those movies where, you know, we're spluttering with laughter and sobbing, you know, keening, you know, at bits. But I wonder if there's something unique to reading, because we do it at our pace, we do it in time for ourselves. I mean, I do see people on the high-speed train or on the tube or whatever, but it's only visual now.
Yes, I know.
And I do worry about that, because you literally can be in another world, which I know you can do visually, but it's a world that you have helped me create, but I created it.
Yeah, reading is different.
I can see what they look like, which is totally different from what you think they look
like. Exactly.
Despite the fact that you wrote it. It's mine in a way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I do quite a lot of interviewing myself at literary festivals and things, and sometimes I get like a big pile of books I need to read because I'm going to interview the authors. And so it's a little while before I might pick up, especially if I have to read, say, a lot of memoirs or nonfiction. And there might be a little while before I pick up like a novel that I've been wanting to read. I've always got a stack of to read, the to read pile. They're often novels I've, you know.
See, that's again something I'm like, that's me.
Yeah. And and then you sort of pick up the book that you bought because you love that author 3 months earlier and you think, oh, I can read this. And I always have that feeling of, like, you know, sinking into something lovely, you know, and you think, oh, yes. And then I realise how much I miss that when I don't do it. And so I think when young people don't read anymore and they watch it all on video, or they, you know, it's all audiobooks or it's all YouTube or whatever. I mean, audiobooks are great. They have their place if you're driving along and stuff. But I think there is nothing nicer than just curling up, sofa, sherry, book, you know, a couple of hours of like absolutely losing yourself in that book. And I always feel it's a bit sad when people don't do that, because they've missed out on that pleasure. You know, it's a bit like, this is completely random, but it's a bit like breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. When women have never breastfed, I'm not in any way judgmental, and I would never say, oh, the baby will suffer or anything like that. I just think, oh, well, it's a shame for you that you don't know how lovely that experience is once you get over the cracked nipples, you know, once you get over those first awful days.
RadioGorgeous.com.